What they found was I had a large abscess infection in my abdomen, 17 centimeters. So that's like the size of, a softball. But no, it got to the point where I was still very much fighting for my life. My weight was plummeting. I wasn't eating anything.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Stoma for Life. As we start today's episode, which is all about ulcerative colitis and bowel cancer and so much more, I want to pause on something that matters to all of us in this community, which is progress. Recently, new research in bowel cancer has highlighted earlier detection pathways to improve treatment responses. Now, those are small steps forward that carry very real meaning for anybody who's lived through or alongside this diagnosis. It's been 4 years since my own bowel cancer diagnosis, and I've come to understand life in a totally different way. Not louder or faster, but clearer. When you are faced with something that strips life back to its essentials, being present stops sounding like a nice idea and becomes a daily practice. You start to notice what deserves your time, your attention, and your energy. Living consciously isn't about perfection, it's about choosing to stay awake to your own life, even on the difficult days. Now, today's guest has a journey that reflects all those truths. Growing up in San Diego, California, he developed a love for the ocean, surfing and windsurfing, which sparked a lifelong curiosity about weather and the world around him. He went on to study at the University of California at Santa Barbara and built a 25-year career as a meteorologist. Along the way, he has faced extraordinary challenges that have tested his resilience and shaped his outlook on life. His story is too rich for one episode, so this is part one, where we start at the very beginning and explore the experiences that set him on his remarkable path. Welcome to Stoma for Life, Jeremy Elster.
Thanks, Rafaela. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Now, it's wonderful to have you here, Jeremy. To perhaps start at the beginning, I think, is most important. I'd love to hear about your early years. Like growing up near San Diego, how did your life of surfing and windsurfing actually shape your outlook on life?
So I was lucky enough to grow up near or right on the beach in my formative years, my childhood years. And yeah, it was just kind of natural for me to participate in the ocean and all it had to offer. And I started out as a young kid, just sort of bodyboarding, you know, maybe when I was about 8 or so. And just got familiar with the ocean and what that was like. And eventually, you know, I had some friends that were proper surfing, stand-up surfing. So I had to go with that, and I fell in love with it straight away. And I knew, you know, that I wanted that to be a major part of my life. And I just spent, you know, growing up right on the ocean, I spent a lot of time just observing. And, you know, the ocean is constantly changing, and it's never the same. So every day is different, every minute, every second's different. And just observing and really, like, if you're a surfer, you really need to know what's going on in the ocean. And so, yeah, I was always very observant. I paid a lot of attention. I stared at the ocean for hours every day, just kind of paying attention and seeing what's going on, all the different changes. And, you know, I also got into windsurfing, too. And so the combination of the two sports really kind of shaped my early years. And I started thinking about the future and what I wanted to do with my life. And, you know, I really kind of thought that I wanted to get into the weather in some capacity, whether it was forecasting or being on TV or whatever.
So one can actually say that the way you grew up shaped your life and your career choice. I do know things changed in your teens, correct?
I did start to have a few health problems when I was young, which was kind of unusual for a teenager to have these types of problems. I remember having some digestive issues and some pain and things like that. And so I went to get it sort of checked out. I was later diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, and that was at age 15. And I'm 55 now, so I've lived a little bit. But back then, this was in the mid-80s now, there was no internet. The medical system was much more revered back then. There was no reason to doubt what they were telling me. But I do remember them saying, like, we don't really know what causes UC, and we don't really have a cure. All we can kind of do for you is give you some medications that will kind of just relieve some of the symptoms. But for anybody out there who has ulcerative colitis or who's had it, they know that the symptoms when the flare-ups do come, they're pretty incredible, pretty intense.
I've had guests on the show who struggle for years to get a diagnosis, and I find it so important to actually get one, as that is a step towards managing it. But surely, as a teenager, this was extremely hard.
I just remember just barely being able to get out of bed. And as a teenager, you're supposed to have heaps of energy, right? And at that point, my body was going through other changes as well, hormonal changes, growth changes. And now I had this other thing that I was trying to figure out what was going on there. So yeah, it became a challenging childhood. It went from great living at the ocean and surfing every day to now I'm having these changes that I'm dealing with. And that was kind of the stepping stone or a building block, let's say, for my health journey.
Now let's dive a little deeper into the challenges, because we might have parents listening in whose children have ulcerative colitis, or they suspect that their children have ulcerative colitis. So this is important for them to hear from somebody who's lived this most of his life. What are the challenges, especially as a teenage boy? Were you able to share this with friends? You were still at school, so that must have been extremely challenging.
Being a teenager can be awkward just in and of itself, right? So I didn't really share with too many people, to be honest. It's kind of one of those things where I felt like I just wanted to sort of keep it to myself. But it did come with certain challenges. Like it does affect when you're having a flare up, which like I said, can be quite debilitating. Yeah, it can affect your social life, not wanting to hang out with friends or opposite girlfriends or whatever, playing athletics, maybe not being able to make it to practice, things like that. Even just going to school, going to classes, there were times where I had to excuse myself and go to the bathroom. So there were a lot of, seemingly, insignificant challenges on the surface, but for me, it was something that I was having to deal with kind of more on my own. I didn't get my friends too involved. Obviously, my family knew what was going on. I guess it kind of resulted in me being a little bit more inward, and not wanting to really talk about the challenges that I was facing because, let's be honest, dealing with teenagers and that type of a situation was challenging because, kids can be, particularly teenagers can be a little bit cruel, and if you're dealing with some issues such as I was dealing with, it's probably just another little thing to add to the mix that potentially would cause others to sort of question what was going on. But yeah, it was certainly challenging, and like I said, I kept to myself a little bit more than probably your average teenager, and that sort of carried on into my university days and even towards my professional life.
You've said something which I think is very important, because in those days there was no internet.
Correct.
So other people
Yeah.
also not really inform themselves. I mean, nobody would go to the library now and look up ulcerative
No.
colitis. And nowadays it's so much easier. And also, I think our culture has changed because of social media. People share more readily about their conditions, and it's all more about
Definitely.
inclusivity and and actually talking and openly about your condition is not really taboo anymore. But that was a
Yeah,
long
definitely.
way. We've come a long way.
Yeah. I mean, for sure, that was a big part of it. Not being able to do your own research online, not being able to connect with other. I mean, I'm on a whole list of Facebook groups that have people with UC, colorectal cancer, all different types of groups, and it's a great way to share information. It's a great way to see what other people are experiencing and how they've adjusted to their new situation and what types of maybe alternative treatments and what's worked and what hasn't worked. That none of that was available back then. And for quite a while, actually, it wasn't until the mid-90s, and at that point I was 10 years in with the UC. And so it got to the point where I was just kind of adapting, and this was my new reality. I do remember, doctors telling me originally, like, there's no cure. Obviously, we can treat the symptoms, but at some point, we may want to operate and remove a segment of your colon or rectum. And I thought to myself, that's not really what I want to do, And so I fought that for a long, long time, and ended up being, close to 35 years, actually. I mean, I don't want to skip too far ahead, but yeah, it was a challenge nonetheless, for sure, not being able to do your own research and really just having to trust, doctors and what they were telling you. And but yeah, I mean, I would say in the last 10 years for sure, and even in the last couple of years with, artificial intelligence, AI, I mean, that's really kind of exacerbated, like, all the different things that you can research. And yeah, now I think everyone's an expert on pretty much every topic, no matter what it is. So yeah, it's definitely, we live in interesting times for sure.
Tremendously interesting times, and like you said, it's definitely shaped your outlook on life, I'm sure, and also the way your life actually progressed being diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, like I was saying before, with just relationships, I found it hard to just be with friends because I'd have these flare-ups that would last days and sometimes weeks, and I would just sort of disappear for a while, and my friends wouldn't really know what was going on. They kind of knew, but not really the extent of it. And I didn't spend as much time in social circles that maybe other kids were doing, at that age. Certainly at the university level, where everyone's, there's thousands of people and they're all kind of commingling. Now, granted, I did have periods of time where I felt relatively fine and normal, whatever normal was for me. And so there were periods of time where I felt pretty confident and just my day to day. And so yeah, it was, but there was always like that in the back of my mind, like, what if a flare-up were to occur? Particularly, I had anxiety about being in large crowds, and I had anxiety about traveling, like being on an airplane, things like that that most people really wouldn't consider to be a thing. But just, yeah, having to be near a bathroom all the time. And even if I was near a bathroom, like, what if there was someone in front of me in a public toilet setting where I had to wait? And so there was, I did sort of have this low level anxiety kind of in the background at all times. And, I kind of learned to live with it, but it really wasn't a great way to go through life, having this anxiety all the time. So yeah, I found ways to manage it to some degree. And certainly when I wasn't having any flare up, when I was feeling okay, those anxiety fears sort of melted away to some degree. But yeah, it was definitely a challenge, but I lived with it for quite a long time, probably longer than anybody would have expected.
Earlier on, you said that doctors did mention that if things progress and worsen, that you might have a section of your colon removed. Certainly, having that in the back of your head did not help with anxiety. I'd never heard of the word stoma used before when I received my diagnosis, and it felt like being struck by lightning.
Correct. Yeah, it's shocking, really, right? And I had heard back, that's, when I was in my teenage years, they were telling me like I may have to have an ostomy someday. And to your point, I didn't know what an ostomy was. I had never known anybody to have one. I had never seen it on TV, read about it in a book, nothing. There was nothing there. And so yeah, and but I do remember is thinking to myself, I don't think that's going to be for me. Like, I'm going to figure out a way to avoid that situation at all costs. And sure enough, that was my mindset basically from day one, with a UC diagnosis. Like, I am not going, that's not going to be for me. I'm going to figure out a way to avoid that as long as I can. And I did that. I did a great job in my mind. But it was, yeah, it was not without challenges. I'd have these flare-ups that would last weeks sometimes, and but then I had to, had to get up and go to work or whatever. I had to, something I had to do, and so that was the only reason to get out of bed, was to do whatever I needed to do that day. And so yeah, it made life much more challenging, much more difficult, and but I think it also made me stronger in a lot of ways, because if I was able to manage these challenges, I could probably manage just about anything, to be honest.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
The station that makes you feel good.
I had several different doctors over the years because I moved around based on where I was living. So every time I would move, I would find a new gastroenterologist, GI. So, every time I was meeting with a new one, they would go over my health history and kind of tell me the same thing, like, don't you want to just get this portion of your colon or rectum, removed, and it will solve all of your problems? And I was like, no, I don't think so. Not really. Thanks. And so what we would do is just kind of manage the situation, right? So we would do regular colonoscopies. I've probably had, I don't know, 20 colonoscopies in my life, which is incredible, right? And, each time they'd look around in there and they'd tell me, yeah, it doesn't look great, but it's not terrible. If you want to keep managing this the way that we're managing it, then, go for it. They would remove, every now and again, they'd remove some polyps, which is kind of like a precancerous sort of small mass. So I had those removed, and they always came back negative for any type of dysplasia or cancer or anything. So I felt like I was doing a pretty good job of managing that over the years, and just with regular, testing and some medication. I was on some anti-inflammatory medications that were kind of low grade, so nothing really terrible with the side effects or anything like that. But if I did get a flare up, they would prescribe me a steroid, the prednisone, which alleviated the system. Those, the flare up symptoms pretty significantly, but you can't be on a steroid your entire life. So that was kind of like, it was a real delicate balance between taking those and weaning myself off them, because you can't just stop cold turkey what they're telling me. You have to kind of slowly taper down. So, I was going through cycles of that. That went on for 35 years. Yeah. And I don't know, they kept telling me, like, we've never seen anybody with UC for that long. I'm sure there are others out there, but it was just one of those things where in their mind, like, why are you going through all this suffering? And in my mind, I'm like, I'd rather do this than have a stoma. And that was my thinking for the longest time. And that, that eventually changed as well.
I told you, I've had multiple guests on with ulcerative colitis, and they've all said exactly what you've said. You know, they'd rather go down that other path than have a bag.
Yeah. Yeah. That was me.
Yeah. Because, let's face it. I mean, it's nobody's first choice. And especially if you're a young person, I always associated that type of thing, especially bowel cancer, for old people.
Right.
Okay. I'm not the youngest anymore either, but still I feel young. But you were so young when you were diagnosed, and clearly that is something you don't. And you said it earlier, you had that mindset. No, this is not for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think about it all the time. I look back and I think, well, was I just in denial? Or was I just not trusting what they were telling me? Or, I had all these different thoughts going through my head for years and years. And when I was in remission, when I'd have my periods where I was feeling well, then I think to myself, okay, I made the right decision.
Yeah.
And then when the flare-ups come, I would think to myself, maybe I'll think about the stoma. And so it kind of went back and forth for the longest time.
Yeah.
But I did, as the internet, we were talking about earlier, with the internet coming around, and I started, just kind of middling around on the internet, trying to find, like, is there a cure? Or more importantly, like, what's causing the UC? Like, that to me, I think, is the most crucial part of it, is like, what's the cause? What's the root cause? And, there really wasn't any functional medicine, back in the early days of my situation. And even today, functional medicine, I found it really useful, but most of it's not covered by your typical insurance, system here, at least in the United States. So even if you wanted to go that route and try to find the root cause, you're going to have a hard time figuring it out, and it's going to cost you a lot of money because it's not covered by insurance. So there are roadblocks to trying to find the root cause of your problem.
Yeah.
And then with the internet now, you could have conversations with doctors across the world. You don't have to go physically to a location. A lot of things are really progressed, I think, in the right direction for a lot of different reasons. But certainly back then, I didn't really have any choices that were available to me. And that was the kind of the mindset that I was going through. And I definitely didn't think having an ostomy or a stoma was the right way for me to go. And I had managed the situation relatively well in my mind, probably not in the doctor's mind, or maybe not in my family's mind. But in my mind, I thought I was doing a reasonably good job. And I was still very active, surfing and windsurfing. And, I eventually started snowboarding and doing all these activities, which take a lot of strength and endurance and a lot of determination. And I felt like my whole journey with UC kind of allowed me to excel at some of these other sports, because they are quite challenging. And most people that have UC, particularly during a flare-up, like I said earlier, you just can barely even get out of bed, much less go out there and go surfing, you know, in big surf and crazy currents and rip tides and sharks and whatever else is trying to get you out there, you know. So
now you've just shared with us that you've managed this for a very long time, living with ulcerative colitis and finding your normal. But I know things changed drastically. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so living here in Santa Cruz, I think I mentioned before, I have several different gastroenterologists. And so the one I had here in Santa Cruz, I had known for 20 years, and we had a long-standing relationship. And he knew me, for lack of a better term, he knew me inside and out. So he knew what my wishes were and my desires. And but yeah, we did the regular colonoscopies, I'd say every 2 to 3 years. And yeah, it was actually, I think it was in December of 2018. I went in for a colonoscopy. He kind of, you know, told me afterwards that there was something he didn't really like. He saw something he didn't really like. There was a mass that was in my rectum, kind of down near my anus. Mm-hmm. And so what he wanted me to do was get a CT scan and then go see a surgeon, a colorectal surgeon. So this was the first time that he, you know, I'd heard any of this come out of his mouth before. So I knew there was something wasn't quite right. And like I said before, like we'd had plenty of times where we, you know, removed polyps and things like that. So I thought, well, maybe it's just a polyp. But it was in an area that was a little bit difficult. And so yeah, he ordered a CT scan. And, you know, my initial thought was maybe he thought it was cancer. So, and I, you know, by that point I had lived a little bit. I was 49 years old at the time. So I lived a little bit and I had kind of observed the cancer industry and, you know, kind of really evaluated what it was. And I knew it was, I mean, I don't think anybody can go through the standard of care and not understand, like it's harsh and you're in for a battle, right? So when he, you know, kind of prescribed this CT scan, I was thinking like, okay, well, he probably thinks it's something bad. And but the interesting part, and this kind of ties it all in together for like just observing like with the weather and you know, like as a meteorologist, I analyze a lot of data. I look for patterns, pattern recognition. Very few things are in absolutes. It's a lot of percentages, like very few things in meteorology are 100% or 0%. So I had all these sort of analytical thoughts going through my head. But the first sort of red flag for me was when my insurance company decided they weren't going to approve my CT scan. And so, So yeah, I'm like, okay, here we go. Like all the preconceived notions I had about the system suddenly like are coming to fruition. It's all happening right in front of me now. So they didn't approve the CT scan, and I was talking to my parents about it, and they're just like, well, just go get the scan. We'll pay for it out of pocket, and then we'll deal with the insurance company later. So we did that, got the scan, made an appointment to see the surgeon, and I had a biopsy from the colonoscopy that we did. That was showing negative for cancer. I had a CT scan that obviously was showing a mass in my rectum, but it was also saying negative for cancer. Mm-hmm. So then I go to the surgeon and, you know, I wasn't really sure what to expect because I had these negative test results in my hand. And we walk in there and he's like, well, I think it's cancer. I'm pretty sure, but the problem with where the mass was in my rectum, in order to remove it, his recommendation was to remove my entire rectum. So we couldn't just remove the mass. He was saying I would have some incontinence issues if we just tried to remove the mass without the rectum. And so that didn't sound very good to be dealing with incontinence for the rest of my life. And then having my rectum removed didn't sound like a great option either. So I was like, thank you for that information. I think I'm going to try to get another opinion. before I make a decision. And, you know, he wanted to schedule the surgery like Monday, come in Monday, we can do it on Monday. So I went to see another surgeon, same kind of thing. I think it's cancer. We can't really remove the mass without removing your rectum. But in my mind, I'm like, well, if it's not cancer, I don't think I want to have an ostomy. Like, that was kind of my thinking. That had been my thinking for 35 years. So why would my thinking suddenly change now with a diagnosis that was a little bit fuzzy, right? So now I have all the interesting part about this, you know, going through the system is now I have, you know, two top surgeons in my area telling me that they wanted to remove my rectum and that it was likely cancer. So now I have that on my record. And so looking back on it, it probably wasn't going to happen that I was going to be able to find someone that would help me because I've got these two top surgeons saying it's cancer, remove the rectum. So very few people within that same system were going to say, oh yeah, we can totally take this out. No worries. And you'll be fine. Or we could treat it. Or we could try to figure out what it is because it was testing as benign. And I'm like, well, this is kind of crazy to me. Like I was saying earlier, all my preconceived notions of the whole medical system and cancer industry, like, were all like front and center for me. So it's like reinforcing my whole thinking, which my analytical mind was saying, no, there must be another way. I don't want to do the ostomy. You know, this is starting to be the time where I had to sort of go out on my own and see if I can find anything out there online that might match my situation and maybe anybody that can help me try to figure out what's going on. So I had another GI doc tell me that he went in there and had a look around and said he saw some scar tissue. Maybe it's just a bundle of scar tissue that, because I had so much inflammation in that area. So we kind of looked around at how to deal with that. And I couldn't really find anything too glaring online about, totally resolving the scar tissue. And then I thought, well, maybe there could be a hemorrhoid in there. So I was looking around at that possibility. But nothing I found really was concrete. And, you know, I couldn't really find the solution that I was looking for. So this went on for a period of several months now. I was noticing the mass in my rectum. I was having difficulty on the toilet, and more so than I've had in quite some time.
Did you feel anything else? I had a similar diagnosis, and looking back, you obviously want to find out those signs that might have led to an earlier diagnosis. And in my case, I felt extremely tired, extremely fatigued, but I attributed that to being postmenopausal. So what were some of your signs?
Yeah, fatigue for sure. I wasn't eating as much food. I definitely wasn't. I was starting to exercise less and less. I was sleeping more. So things were starting to, I wouldn't say unravel, but I could definitely notice there was a little bit of a downturn. I couldn't find a solution to my problem anywhere, particularly with those. Yeah, those two surgeons, like with their diagnosis of what they wanted to do in prognosis. So yeah, later on in 2019, things really started to slip. My appetite was almost zero, and I was having extreme difficulty eliminating any waste when I was in the toilet. So there was a point, I think it must have been about October then, where, which was around my birthday, my wife called my parents and she was extremely concerned. And I remember this vividly. She basically thought that I was dying. Yeah, I was going downhill that quickly. I was losing so much weight. I was in a lot of pain at that point. And so they ended up, they lived in Hawaii, and my sister and her partner also flew over. They all lived in Hawaii. They all flew over because they were extremely concerned. And I was, at that point, I wasn't hallucinating, but I was definitely starting to like not really be all to, like, my thoughts weren't really coherent and things really were slipping away. And so they came, they took one look at me, and they're like, I think we're gonna have to go to the emergency room. So, and I knew what they wanted to do to me in the emergency room. So I was really hesitant to go, but it was getting to the point where I felt like I was getting pretty close to the end.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Aunt and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So I went to the ER and, you know, they did some tests, but straight away they were in the camp like, okay, the rectum's got to go and it's time for an ostomy. And they were trying to convince me of that. We did some more testing. But what they found was I had a large abscess infection in my abdomen, 17 centimeters. So that's like the size of I think like a softball.
Yeah.
So that was going to complicate the surgery to some degree in terms of any organ removal. So by the grace of God, they offered me a solution of a temporary ostomy, which is basically a way to divert all of my waste into a colostomy, and so bypassing the whole rectal area and also bypassing the abscess infection area. And then they also told me that, you know, if I could get the rectal situation sorted out, resolved, that they could reverse the colostomy. And I had never even known that as a possibility either. So going from never wanting an ostomy to having the potential of it being reversed was like the best option I could have ever possibly imagined.
So let's just recap. After decades of suffering with ulcerative colitis, you were diagnosed with a potential rectal cancer that even the doctors were not entirely sure of, to then become so poorly that you needed stoma surgery to bypass an abscess that needed healing before anything else could be addressed. So now what?
So I went ahead with the surgery. It was about a 3 to 4 hour procedure, if I recall correctly. But the main concern was the abscess. And, you know, they were telling me that if I hadn't come in when I did, there's a very good chance that I would have gone completely septic. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, you're really in a bad way.
Yeah. So the abscess was in your colon?
Correct. And it had what's known as a fistula as well, which is basically like a tunnel, like from my kind of rectal area to my bladder. There was like this tunnel of infection going to and fro.
That must have been just so incredibly painful.
It was so incredibly painful. But the problem was that they had to drain the abscess, and that took the better part. I was actually ended up being in the hospital for 23 days. And this was someone who had never really been in the hospital before. And so now my first adventure with the hospital was now 23 days, which is kind of crazy. But but no, it got to the point where I was still very much fighting for my life. My weight was plummeting. I wasn't eating anything. And my weight got down to 112 pounds. So that was a good 40 pounds lighter than I'd ever been in my entire life. So I think I sent you a picture, but
yes, you did.
I was basically like a skeleton. Yeah. and I was fighting this infection. There were periods of time, I was on all these crazy antibiotics and pain medications. I kind of felt like I had left my body at periods of time during this hospitalization. And it kind of seemed like, even though we were treating the infection, it seemed like maybe it was just kind of running wild, and this was going to be my final days passing on in the hospital, which I think is most people's worst nightmare. But by the grace of God, yeah, it was a miracle that I survived that. After 23 days, I finally was discharged. I was able to eat a little bit. First, it was intravenously, and then I was able to start, eating normally, and my ostomy was working, I was putting on a little bit of weight, and so they discharged me and said, good luck to you. And at that point, I'd say it probably took me a good solid 6 months to fully recover from that whole process and the surgery and the abscess and putting my weight back on. And so this was now into mid 2020. And if you recall, into mid 2020, we're talking COVID times now. So here I was with this temporary ostomy, a mass in my rectum, and now we're into COVID times where you're lucky if you can get any sort of appointment with anybody,
Now, COVID times were hard. We were so isolated. I remember, and I'm sure many listeners can relate to what life was like, especially when you have an urgent medical condition that needs addressing. So actually, getting an appointment was extremely difficult, and treatment of any form was close to a miracle.
It was a miracle, yeah. And then every time, if I wanted to go in for a procedure, I had to take a COVID test. If I wanted to go in for any sort of scan, another COVID test. Like it just added several more layers of complexity to my story, which is already, in my mind, quite complex. So yeah, we're into sort of the summer of 2020 now, and so I also developed a situation with my stoma. I don't know if you've ever had this, but I started developing a prolapse, which is basically when the stoma starts to kind of telescope outward away from your body.
I've not, but please explain, because that would be interesting to hear.
So the stoma, most of the time it's fairly static. It doesn't move, but occasionally, particularly if you are very active and are doing strenuous activities, you can put a little bit of extra pressure in that area. And it kind of, I think it just kind of dislodged to some degree and it started telescoping outward away from my body. So it started off relatively small, like I'd say maybe, a few centimeters. But then over time, it kept going out further and further to the point where it was now quite painful. And not only just painful, but it kind of prohibited me from doing any of the activities that I like doing. So yeah, it was becoming problematic and to the point where I definitely needed a surgical procedure to fix it, what's called a stoma revision. But the problem was that nobody wanted to work on me with a stoma revision because of my whole history that I had just gone through and the possible cancer diagnosis. So nobody wanted to touch me, that I went around trying to see if anybody could help me. Because really what I wanted to do was get the stoma revision and then start or continue to try to figure out what was going on in the rectal area. But there was a point at which, particularly with the COVID situation, there was just kind of a point where I kind of just resigned to the fact that I don't think I was going to be able to find the help that I needed in order to get myself out of the situation. I felt stuck. So basically, what happened after that was this was probably I decided, my family and I decided I should go back to the original surgeon and just say, hey, I think I want to just go with the permanent ostomy. Let's do the surgery and let's just move on. And so when I showed up in his office, he was quite surprised that I was back. And then I had a new little friend, my stoma, with me that I rejected, you know, the year prior. So that was a kind of a funny interaction, as I recall. So what he decided, and I thought that was really prudent, was let's do some more tests. I haven't seen you for a little while. Mm-hmm. Let's do some more testing and just see where we are. So we did another scan.
This concludes our first part of Jeremy Elster's incredible story. And if you think that was the end of his journey struggling with ulcerative colitis, maybe in a sense, but his battle had only just started. So do tune in to Stoma for Life right here on UK Health Radio for part two of Jeremy Elster's incredible story that will leave you speechless. So I will leave you for now. Take care and be kind to yourself and others.